Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Welcome to the Think and Grow Rich call. It is April 12, 2012. A marvelous, wonderful, miraculous day to be alive and breathing and thinking and feeling and planning and taking action and moving forward in life. I do want to welcome each of you to the call. And I want to start off with just a couple of quotes to think about here. Mike Nelson this morning said to me, good morning on Skype, and he sent me a quote which is very profound. It says, he who controls others may be powerful, but he who has mastered himself is mightier still. Lao Tzu. And I sent him a quote back by Socrates. And this quote says, the unexamined life is not worth living. Socrates. Folks, how powerful. What if on a daily basis there were a textbook, a manual, a blueprint, a map that you could plug into, that you could learn from, that you could examine yourself daily to ensure that you are constantly moving forward in a major way towards your ideal life? That is the book Think and Grow Rich. And I love one of the comments that Todd, one of our valued contributors, made yesterday when he said repetition is the, what is it, repetition? Okay, I've lost it now. Repetition is the mother of learning or something like that. That's how we learn, repetition, repetition, repetition. And if you have all the money you want, if you have your perfect life, everything is just dandy and you don't want to grow or generate any more income or have any more success in your business, then maybe this isn't a book you want to study. But if you want to move forward, if you want to have more, if you want to have better plans, if you want to understand the principles, the laws by which every successful person has accumulated their success financially speaking, but obviously this carries over into other areas of life, then we want to be serious students of this book. And of course you are. If you're on the call, thank you for being a return caller. If you're just joining us, welcome. We're glad to have you. Make this a daily part of your life. I implore you. Today we're jumping into Chapter 12, The Subconscious Mind, the Connecting... actually, no, we're not. We already went through that. Give me just one moment here. Chapter 14, The Sixth Sense, The Door to the Temple of Wisdom. The 13th step toward riches. The 13th principle is known as the sixth sense, through which infinite intelligence may and will communicate voluntarily without any effort from or demands by the individual. And here's just a quick checkup at this point. When I started this book this time through, I said to myself, I want to know what all 13 principles are. And that's just a question for you. Do you know what the 13 principles are in the book Think and Grow Rich? I started to jot them out, and I think I'm still a couple shy. I've got to do some searching through the book. But 13 principles we want to be familiar with. This principle, the 13th, is the apex of the philosophy. It can be assimilated, understood, and applied only by mastering the first other 12 principles. The sixth sense is that portion of the subconscious mind which has been referred to as the creative imagination. It has also been referred to as the receiving set through which ideas, plans, and thoughts flash into the mind. The flashes are sometimes called hunches or inspirations. The sixth sense defies description. It cannot be described to a person who has not mastered the other principles of this philosophy, because such a person has no knowledge and no experience with which the sixth sense may be compared. Understanding of the sixth sense comes only by meditation through mind development from within. The sixth sense is probably the medium of contact between the finite mind of man and infinite intelligence. And for this reason, it is a mixture of both the mental and the spiritual. It is believed to be the point at which the mind of man contacts the universal mind. After you have mastered the principles described in this book, you will be prepared to accept as truth a statement which may otherwise be incredible to you. Namely, through the aid of the sixth sense, you will be warned of impending dangers in time to avoid them, and notified of opportunities in time to embrace them. There comes to your aid and to do your bidding with the development of the sixth sense a guardian angel who will open to you at all times the door to the temple of wisdom. Whether or not this is a statement of truth, you will never know, except by following the instructions described in the pages of this book or a similar method of procedure. The author is not a believer in, nor an advocate of miracles, for the reason that he has enough knowledge of nature to understand that nature never deviates from her established laws. Some of her laws are so incomprehensible that they produce what appear to be miracles. The sixth sense comes as near to being a miracle as anything I have ever experienced, and it appears so only because I do not understand the method by which this principle is operated. This much the author does know, that there is a power, or a first cause, or an intelligence, which permeates every atom of matter and embraces every unit of energy perceptible to man, that this infinite intelligence converts acorns into oak trees, causes water to flow downhill in response to the law of gravity, follows night with day and winter with summer, each maintaining its proper place and relationship to the other. This intelligence may, through the principles of this philosophy, be induced to aid in transmuting desires into concrete or material form. The author has this knowledge because he has experimented with it and he has experienced it. Step by step, through the preceding chapters, you have been led to this, the last principle. If you have mastered each of the preceding principles, you are now prepared to accept, without being skeptical, the stupendous claims made here. If you have not mastered the other principles, you must do so before you may determine definitely whether or not the claims made in this chapter are fact or fiction. While I was passing through the age of hero worship, I found myself trying to imitate those whom I most admired. Moreover, I discovered that the element of faith with which I endeavored to imitate my goals gave me great capacity to do so quite successfully. I have never entirely divested myself of this habit of hero worship, although I have passed the age commonly given over to such. My experience has taught me that the next best thing to being truly great is to emulate the great by feeling and action as nearly as possible. Long before I had ever written a line for publication or endeavored to deliver a speech in public, I followed the habit of reshaping my own character by trying to imitate the nine men whose lives and life works have been most impressive to me. These nine men were Emerson, Paine, Edison, Darwin, Lincoln, Burbank, Napoleon, Ford, and Carnegie. Every night over a long period of years, I held an imaginary council with this group whom I called my invisible counselors. The procedure was this. Just before going to sleep at night, I would shut my eyes and see in my imagination this group of men seated with me around my council table. Here I had not only an opportunity to sit among those whom I considered to be great, but I actually dominated the group by serving as the chairman. I had a very definite purpose in indulging my imagination through these nightly meetings. My purpose was to rebuild my own character so it would represent a composite of the characters of my imaginary counselors. Realizing, as I did early in life, that I had to overcome the handicap of birth in an environment of ignorance and superstition, I deliberately assigned myself the task of voluntary rebirth through the method here described. Being an earnest student of psychology, I knew, of course, that all men have become what they are because of their dominating thoughts and desires. I knew that every deeply seated desire has the effect of causing one to seek outward expression through which that desire may be transmuted into reality. I knew that self-suggestion is a powerful factor in building character, that it is, in fact, the sole principle through which character is builded. With this knowledge of the principles of mind operation, I was fairly well armed with the equipment needed in rebuilding my character. In these imaginary council meetings, I called on my cabinet members for the knowledge I wished each to contribute, addressing myself to each member in audible words as follows. Mr. Emerson, I desire to acquire from you the marvelous understanding of nature which distinguished your life. I ask that you may make an impress upon my subconscious mind of whatever qualities you possessed which enabled you to understand and adapt yourself to the laws of nature. I ask that you assist me in reaching and drawing upon whatever sources of knowledge are available to this end. Mr. Burbank, I request that you pass on to me the knowledge which enabled you to so harmonize the laws of nature that you caused the cactus to shed its thorns and become an edible food. Give me access to the knowledge which enabled you to make two blades of grass grow where but one grew before, and helped you to blend the coloring of flowers with more splendor and harmony, for you alone have successfully gilded the lily. Napoleon, I desire to acquire from you by emulation the marvelous ability you possess to inspire men and to arouse them to greater and more determined spirit of action. Also to acquire the spirit of enduring faith which enabled you to turn defeat into victory and to surmount staggering obstacles. Emperor of fate, king of chance, man of destiny, I salute you. Mr. Payne, I desire to acquire from you the freedom of thought and the courage and clarity with which to express convictions which so distinguished you. Mr. Darwin, I wish to acquire from you the marvelous patience and ability to study cause and effect without bias or prejudice so exemplified by you in the field of natural science. Mr. Lincoln, I desire to build into my own character the keen sense of justice, the untiring spirit of patience, the sense of humor, the human understanding, and the tolerance which you were your distinguishing characteristics. Mr. Carnegie, I am already indebted to you for my choice of a life work, which has brought me great happiness and peace of mind. I wish to acquire a thorough understanding of the principles of organized effort, which you use so effectively in the building of a great industrial enterprise. Mr. Ford, you have been among the most helpful of the men who have supplied much of the material essential to my work. I wish to acquire your spirit of persistence, the determination, poise, and self-confidence which have enabled you to master poverty, organize, unify, and simplify human effort, so I may help others to follow in your footsteps. Mr. Edison, I have seated you nearest to me at my right because of the personal cooperation you have given me during my research into the causes of success and failure. I wish to acquire from you the marvelous spirit of faith with which you have uncovered so many of nature's secrets, the spirit of unremitting toil with which you have so often wrested victory from defeat. My method of addressing the members of the imaginary cabinet would vary according to the traits of character in which I was, for the moment, most interested in acquiring. I studied the records of their lives with painstaking care. After some months of this nightly procedure, I was astounded by the discovery that these imaginary figures became apparently real. Each of these nine men developed individual characteristics which surprised me. For example, Lincoln developed the habit of always being late when walking around in solemn parade. When he came in, he walked very slowly, with his hands clasped behind him, and once in a while he would stop as he passed and rest his hand momentarily upon my shoulder. He always wore an expression of seriousness upon his face. Rarely did I see him smile. The cares of a sundered nation made him grave. That was not true of the others. Burbank and Payne often indulged in witty repartee, which seemed at times to shock the other members of the cabinet. One night, Payne suggested that I prepare a lecture on the Age of Reason and deliver it from the pulpit of a church which I formerly attended. Many around the table laughed heartily at the suggestion. Not Napoleon. He drew his mouth down at the corners and groaned so loudly that all turned and looked at him with amazement. To him, the church was but a pawn of the state, not to be reformed, but to be used as a convenient inciter to mass activity by the people. On occasion, Burbank was late. When he came, he was excited with enthusiasm and explained that he had been late because of an experiment he was making through which he hoped to be able to grow apples on any sort of tree. Payne chided him by reminding him that it was an apple which started all the trouble between man and woman. Darwin chuckled heartily as he suggested that Payne should watch out for little serpents when he went into the forest to gather apples, as they had the habit of growing into big snakes. Emerson observed, "No serpents, no apples," and Napoleon remarked, "No apples, no state." Lincoln developed the habit of always being the last one to leave the table after each meeting. On one occasion, he leaned across the end of the table, his arms folded, and remained in that position for many minutes. I made no attempt to disturb him. Finally, he lifted his head slowly, got up and walked to the door, then turned around, came back, and laid his hand on my shoulder and said, "My boy, you will need much courage if you remain steadfast in carrying out your purpose in life. But remember, when difficulties overtake you, the common people have common sense. Adversity will develop it." One evening, Edison arrived ahead of all the others. He walked over and seated himself at my left, where Emerson was accustomed to sit, and said, "You are destined to witness the discovery of the secret of life. When the time comes, you will observe that life consists of great swarms of energy or entities, each as intelligent as human beings think themselves to be. These units of life group together like hives of bees and remain together until they disintegrate through lack of harmony. These units have differences of opinion the same as human beings, and often fight amongst themselves. These meetings which you are conducting will be very helpful to you. They will bring to your rescue some of the same units of life which serve the members of your cabinet during their lives. These units are eternal. They never die. Your own thoughts and desires serve as the magnets which attract units of life from the great ocean of life out there. Only the friendly units are attracted, the ones which harmonize with the nature of your desires." The other members of the cabinet began to enter the room. Edison got up and slowly walked around to his own seat. Edison was still living when this happened. It impressed me so greatly that I went to see him and told him about the experience. He smiled broadly and said, "Your dream was more a reality than you may imagine it to have been." He added no further explanation to his statement. These meetings became so realistic that I became fearful of their consequences and discontinued them for several months. The experiences were so uncanny, I was afraid if I continued them, I would lose sight of the fact that the meetings were purely experiences of my imagination. Some 6 months after I had discontinued the practice, I was awakened one night, or thought I was, when I saw Lincoln standing at my bedside. He said, "The world will soon need your services. It is about to undergo a period of chaos which will cause men and women to lose faith and become panic-stricken. Go ahead with your work and complete your philosophy. That is your mission in life. If you neglect it for any cause whatsoever, you will be reduced to a primal state and be compelled to retrace the cycles through which you have passed during thousands of years." I was unable to tell the following morning whether I had dreamed this or had actually been awake, and I have never since found out which it was, but I do know that the dream, if it were a dream, was so vivid in my mind the next day that I resumed my meetings the following night. In our next meeting, the members of my cabinet all filed into the room together and stood at their accustomed places at the council table while Lincoln raised the glass and said, "Gentlemen, let us drink a toast to a friend who has returned to the fold." After that, I began to add new members to my cabinet until it now consists of more than 50, among them Christ, St. Paul, Galileo, Copernicus, Aristotle, Plato, Socrates, Homer, Voltaire, Bruno, Spinoza, Drummond, Kant, Schopenhauer, Newton, Confucius, Elbert Hubbard, Braun, Ingersoll, Wilson, and William James. This is the first time that I have had the courage to mention this. Heretofore, I have remained quiet on the subject because I knew from my own attitude in connection with such matters that I would be misunderstood if I described my unusual experience. I have been emboldened now to reduce my experience to the printed page because I am now less concerned about what they say than I was in the years that have passed. One of the blessings of maturity is that it sometimes brings one greater courage to be truthful regardless of what those who do not understand may think or say. Lest I be misunderstood, I wish here to state most emphatically that I still regard my cabinet meetings as being purely imaginary, but I feel entitled to suggest that while the members of my cabinet may be purely fictional and the meetings existing only in my imagination, they have led me into glorious paths of adventure, rekindled an appreciation of true greatness, encouraged creative endeavor, and emboldened the expression of honest thought. Somewhere in the cell structure of the brain is located an organ which receives vibrations of thought, ordinarily called hunches. So far, science has not discovered where this organ of the sixth sense is located, but this is not important. The fact remains that human beings do receive accurate knowledge through sources other than physical senses. Such knowledge generally is received when the mind is under the influence of extraordinary stimulation. Any emergency which arouses the emotions and causes the heart to beat more rapidly than normal may, and generally does, bring the sixth sense into action. Anyone who has experienced a near accident while driving knows that on such occasions, the sixth sense often comes to one's rescue and aids by split seconds in avoiding the accident. These facts are mentioned preliminary to a statement of fact which I shall now make. namely, that during my meetings with the invisible counselors, I find my mind most receptive to ideas, thoughts, and knowledge which reach me through the sixth sense. I can truthfully say that I owe entirely to my invisible counselors full credit for such ideas, facts, or knowledge as I received through inspiration. On scores of occasions when I have faced emergencies, some of them so grave that my life was in jeopardy, I have been miraculously guided past these difficulties through the influence of my invisible counselors. My original purpose in conducting council meetings with imaginary beings was solely that of impressing my own subconscious mind through the principle of autosuggestion with certain characteristics which I desired to acquire. In more recent years, my experimentation has taken on an entirely different trend. I now go to my imaginary counselors with every difficult problem which confronts me and my clients. The results are often astonishing, although I do not depend entirely on this form of counsel. You, of course, have recognized that this chapter covers a subject with which a majority of people are not familiar. The sixth sense is a subject that will be of great interest and benefit to the person whose aim is to accumulate vast wealth, but it need not claim the attention of those whose desires are more modest. Henry Ford undoubtedly understands and makes practical use of the sixth sense. His vast business and financial operations make it necessary for him to understand and use this principle. The late Thomas A. Edison understood and used the sixth sense in connection with the development of inventions, especially those involving basic patents, in connection with which he had no human experience and no accumulated knowledge to guide him, as was the case while he was working on the talking machine and the moving picture machine. Nearly all great leaders, such as Napoleon, Bismarck, Joan of Arc, Christ, Buddha, Confucius, and Muhammad, understood and probably made use of the sixth sense almost continuously. The major portion of their greatness consisted of their knowledge of this principle. The sixth sense is not something that one can take off and put on at will. Ability to use this great power comes slowly through application of the other principles outlined in this book. Seldom does any individual come into workable knowledge of the sixth sense before the age of 40. More often, the knowledge is not available until one is well past 50. And this for the reason that the spiritual forces with which the sixth sense is so closely related do not mature and become usable except through years of meditation, self-examination, and serious thought. No matter who you are or what may have been your purpose in reading this book, you can profit by it without understanding the principle described in this chapter. This is especially true if your major purpose is that of accumulation of money or other material things. The chapter on the sixth sense was included because the book is designed for the purpose of presenting a complete philosophy by which individuals may unerringly guide themselves in attaining whatever they ask of life. The starting point of all achievement is desire. The finishing point is that brand of knowledge which leads to understanding, understanding of self, of understanding of others, understanding of the laws of nature, recognition, and understanding of happiness. This sort of understanding comes in its fullness only through familiarity with and use of the principle of the sixth sense. Hence, that principle had to be included as a part of this philosophy for the benefit of those who demand more than money. Having read this chapter, you must have observed that while reading it, you were lifted to a high level of mental stimulation. Splendid! Come back to this again a month from now, read it once more, and observe that your mind will soar to still higher level of stimulation. Repeat this experience from time to time, giving no concern as to how much or how little you learn at the time, and eventually you will find yourself in possession of a power that will enable you to throw off discouragement, master fear, overcome procrastination, and draw freely upon your imagination. Then you will have felt the touch of that unknown something, which has been the moving spirit back of every truly great thinker, leader, artist, musician, writer, statesman. Then you will be in a position to transmute your desires into their physical physical or financial counterpart as easily as you may lie down and quit at the first sign of opposition. Previous chapters have described how to develop faith through autosuggestion, desire, and the subconscious. The next chapter presents detailed instructions for the mastery of fear. Here will be found a full description of the six fears, which are the cause of all discouragement, timidity, procrastination, indifference, indecision, the lack of ambition, self-reliance, initiative, self-control, and enthusiasm. Search yourself carefully as you study these six enemies, as they may exist only in your subconscious mind, where their presence will be hard to detect. So we're going to jump into the six ghosts of fear tomorrow. Wow, what a read today. Let me open up the lines. I'm anxious to hear the discussion today. Star 6 to unmute your lines, folks. I'd love to hear from you today.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, good morning, Melvin.
This is a very profound subject matter and chapter, and it truly is something that one cannot force. It will come in time, and it comes that much quicker to the degree that someone believes in oneself. So if you don't have the self-image and the self-esteem, and you don't feel good about, and you don't trust yourself, even when this is trying to come through you, you will not allow it to. You will not listen to it. You will not trust it. So that's why the mention is about learning these other things prior to, and getting them in place in order for this one to come through. And this one is just. This is so powerful and so beautiful, and it's so natural, and it's so it amazes you when it starts working on your behalf. And many of you've already experienced it, where you don't have to even give thought to something; it just automatically flows to you, and you just act upon it, and it's like wow. But it does take some thinking prior to, you know, you got to work at thought. You got to stop being lazy. I don't know if a lot of people know this or not, but. Thinking is a form of work, and people that are lazy don't want to do so. That's why they want to simply let someone else make the thoughts or think for them, or they're concerned about what someone else thinks. But when you take on the responsibility of thinking for yourself and using your own mind and learning to trust and believe in yourself, as time goes on, this is going to come clear and clear, and it's absolutely fantastic to come into it. Back to you, Paul.
Thank you, Melvin. Appreciate those thoughts. It's an exciting thing to think about and ponder, and it's a gift that really is desirable to have. And like you said, it's going to come with time and effort. It's going to come with meditation, thought, giving effort to the thinking process. So appreciate that, Melvin. And I'm looking forward to developing it in myself, obviously, on a much, much higher level. Star 6, who's next?
Good morning, Rick from California.
Good morning, Rick. Welcome to the call.
Fantastic. I want to pick up on something that Melvin said earlier on. He talked about self-image. Self-image is very important. That you cannot create success higher than your self-image. How you see yourself. It's very important to understand this. Because we've talked many times on this call about developing the lens that you see through. And a lot of this coming from knowledge and your belief, the alteration of belief. A personal breakthrough will occur when there is an alteration in belief. And how do you get that? By surrounding yourself with people that are in place where you want to be, where you want to go. And, you know, another part to this whole thing is this, okay? You cannot do this alone. And I wanna read a couple quotes here that I memorized, and what's the interesting thing, we've been talking about guys like Franklin, Ben Franklin, Henry Ford. Let me say this: we must all hang, or shortly we shall all hang separately. Ben Franklin, Henry Ford, coming together is a beginning. Keeping together is progress. Working together is success. I think in the later days, we have guys like Michael Jordan talking about talent with game, teamwork, and champion, and intelligent win championships. Bruce Cosley, coach of the Cincinnati Bengals, former coach, he said, "The era of the rugged individual is giving way to the era of the team player." I want to talk about this Hindu proverb. Help thy brothers both across the river, and loan thine own shall reach the shore. Friends, this has a lot to do with what we're doing here on this call. You remove yourself from the picture. You really want to remove yourself from the picture, and you'll be surprised at what can happen when you take your eye off yourself and put it on others. It's incredible what can happen. All the barriers, all the doubts start to subside when you think about others. It's an incredible thought. But because it's an opposite direction, and what's more incredible is often the opposite, the unnatural move is what seems more spectacular to us. And we're witnessing that. Think about that for a moment. And right back to you, Paul.
Thank you, Rick. Powerful thoughts as always. Star 6, who's next? Don't be shy. I know you're wanting to come out and talk and share your thoughts, feelings on the chapter or some of the things we've been talking about this week.
Paul.
Good morning, Paul.
Was that Marlise there first, and then was that Marlise?
Yes, and I heard it.
Yeah, go ahead, Marlise. I think you beat her by just a fraction of a second there.
Yeah, I just thought everybody would just jump out because this, to me, has been the most profound, most amazing kind of rediscovery because I had forgotten. I somehow believe I probably never even finished reading that book when I picked it up 30 years ago because it is just so incredible. The truth principles and the wisdom, you know, that is being shared here by Napoleon Hill and just imagining what he actually was able to create by just also, obviously, it was given to him also through divine guidance to create this kind of council, imaginary council. That to me is just so absolutely amazing. And of course, we each of us can do the same, and it's part of all the steps that we need to take. But I call that what I think every human being's longing really is, and that is our divine connection, because we are not just physical. Our true essence is spiritual. And that is our connection, whether we want to call it the infinite intelligence, whether it's God, whether it's all there is. But it is this most incredible power that reverberates throughout the universe, that it's in everything. And to hear Napoleon Hill put all of these very, very most incredible truth principles together and so concisely puts it in front of us that we actually can even have a better, deeper understanding and really work with those. I'm just absolutely blown away by that again. And I find whether it's through meditation, whether it's through prayer, and we even learned how to pray more effectively, even on that, it is really trying to connect with our infinite wisdom, that is our truth within, and what we call the little voice. It's that divine guidance connecting with God, because it always wants the best, the very best for each of us. And if the more that we become freed up and can learn to trust that voice that we connect with, that we learn to listen to, all right, the more we can create the magnificent life that we are all meant to live, right? And then be so strong and also empowered in order to reach out to all those who are in need that we can, you know, that we can also help on this journey. So I just, yeah, and this has been my kind of practice also daily basis, and through a spiritual healing group, we have a special practice, and it feels so wonderful. And you just always, you know, you just feel happy and joyful and grateful. It just keeps growing within you and within each and every one of us. And the more of us actually open up to learning about these principles, the more our consciousness is being raised and it becomes more and more understanding, we automatically embrace these truth principles. We just grow automatically by just tying in and connecting with these chords and listening to everyone. Everyone, every time we hear it, you know, we just keep growing in the process. So I just want to thank you again. This is the most amazing, most wonderful way for you to help each and every one of us who wants to keep learning. I could go on and on, but this is truly the basis of it all. And we need to make that time of quietude and connect, which I think has become the most challenging for most people in this very, very hectic, busy kind of life, right, that everybody lives. But it is the essence, and that actually becomes the most important part, even if it means getting up 50 minutes earlier, half an hour earlier. I just urge for everyone to do that. Okay, that was it for today. Thank you so much, and I love each and every one of you.
Marlies, thank you. I loved everything you said, as always. One thing that you said that I want to just reemphasize because it struck home for me, and I think it's an action item that we can take away from this chapter, is you said make that time of quietude and connecting that so many of us, myself included, don't do on a regular basis. That is definitely something that I think can and will help us develop that divine connection, the sixth sense that Napoleon's talking about here. So action item from the call today, Marlies, you nailed it on the head there. Who was that other lady that was coming out there with Marlies?
That was Melody.
Hi, Melody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I practice that quiet time on a regular basis. And in reading this book here, two of the chapters combine in one of my affirmations, and it says about the development of the sixth sense, opening the door to the temple of wisdom, which is what's right, true, and lasting. And then over here it talks about the development being self-examination, which is discernment. So one of my affirmations from the book of Proverbs is, I keep wisdom and discretion before my eyes. It's life to my inner man and life to my outer man. And I like that because I've seen from my quiet time to combine two chapters from this book today. Okay, thank you. And back to you, Paul.
Beautiful, Melody. Thank you for sharing that.
Well, good morning, guys. It's Doc Fran.
Good morning, Doc Fran.
I want to start out by saying I am very excited this morning because I finally encountered a copy of Think and Grow Rich. I bought it last night at Barnes & Noble. That is the complete 1937 text that Paul has been reading from. And it really is fun to have all of the all of the paragraphs that Paul's reading and not just the ones that the abridged editions have chosen to remove, which is pretty much every reference to the metaphysical basis of Napoleon's understandings. And so by eliminating all of those chapters, which obviously someone considered to be woo-woo or too far out there for the ordinary mind to comprehend, they have really gutted a good bit of the impact of the book. And so with reference to this sixth sense, I want to give two examples. One, I was listening to a tape by Louise Hay, and in it, a young woman described an experience where she was driving in her car in a part of the Los Angeles where she was not normally in. And she had this desire. All of a sudden, she had an intense need. She was focused on this need that she needed a vacuum cleaner and a typewriter. And that's kind of an interesting combination of items. And all of a sudden it says that just by happenstance, by mistake, she turned up the wrong street. And as she got to the middle of the block, there was an older gentleman setting out on the curb two items, a vacuum cleaner and a typewriter. So she stopped the car, and she looked at it, and the old gentleman said to her, he said, Miss, he said, both of these items work very well. I simply have no further use for them myself. And she said, well, are they yours? And he said, no, they're yours. So I thought that was pretty incredible in terms of creating instant awareness of through the sixth sense and manifestation of what her desire was at that point in time. And I've personally experienced the sixth sense quite some years ago when I was about 20 years old. I had a silver MGB, which I loved. And I was driving on the turnpike at about 60 miles an hour, and I was behind an 18-wheeler. And as I was there, I was the first car immediately behind this tractor trailer, and I had the sixth sense that the tire was about to disintegrate on that trailer, and I moved over one lane, and within milliseconds, the two rear tires on the drive, you know, would have been immediately into my windshield, both disintegrated, and we all know we've seen the results of that on the highways today. So it is a very real phenomenon. And many of us use this tool or this sense maybe without our direct conscious awareness. And what do I mean by that? Well, it's not foreign to me to read that Napoleon Hill created an imaginary council of great people. Many writers talk about the fact that the mind does not know the difference between what is, quote, reality, which is what our perceptions, senses transmit to us, and imaginations. And so we can do that imprinting of our subconscious mind simply through imagination and through imaginary beliefs, essentially, or we can create any belief we want. And if we reinforce it long enough, it becomes a mental pattern that actually creates value and cause in your life. And so how many of us on the phone have found ourselves doing internal self-talk in our lives? And every hand should go up. And I want to ask you, what is the general tone of that self-talk that we do to ourselves? I know from my personal experience that the bulk of it is criticism and pointing out to ourselves areas where we perceive ourselves as having been less than perfect. And so going back to how we reacted in our childhood, how did you feel when you were criticized, chided, berated, yelled at by your parents or by other adults or by your teachers or by your friends? And what kind of an impact did that cause on your thinking and your self-image, et cetera? So it really keyed into me about why on earth would we want to continue berating ourselves in our internal self-talk and constantly criticizing ourselves, because that imaginary communication, because that's all it is, folks, it's your own imagination, it's your own parroting back of criticisms to yourself, and that in and of itself will limit your outreach, it will limit your self-image, it will limit your manifestations in life, because it really helps to control what you're willing to receive in life based on what you believe you deserve. Let's see. I just lost my train of thought. I had one other little twist on that I was going to do, but I'll pass it back to you, Paul. And if I think of it, I'll pipe back up.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Melvin.
Yeah, if I could just pick up a little bit on what Doc Fran was just speaking of. We all do have that self-talk. And when I became aware of this and it's taking place, I made it my business, and everybody can do the same now that they're aware that such a thing exists, that you give yourself no self-talk except that which is positive. You do have the ability to control that self-talk and talk, and I see to it it's kind of like on automatic now, to where I don't have to even give second thought to it, but I see to it that I tell myself what I can do rather than what I can't do. And this is not just true that I'm saying this, you know, because it is true, and so I need to be saying it anyway. So I tell myself on a regular basis how beautiful I am, how great I am, how nice I am, what I can do, believing in myself, all of those things. And to the degree that you do that, I tell you that it is so profound what will happen to each and every single one of us if we just take control over the ability of that self-talk that we're doing constantly every single day, and we start seeing to it that we give ourselves only the positive, only the good. You will become just that. Back to you, Paul.
Excellent points, both of everyone that's spoken. Just amazing. Amazing true principles. I'm reminded of a quote by Timothy Ferris from the 4-Hour Workweek, who says, "Negative people must be eliminated from our lives. To do otherwise is masochistic." And that's something to really think about, because as both Melvin and Doc Fran just mentioned, we get enough of that from our own selves. And so to endure being cut down and criticized by people around us again and again and again and again, there comes a point where you just need to eliminate it, because it is so hurtful to us. So just another thought on those other thoughts that have already been mentioned. So Star 6, who's next?
Well, Paul, it's Doc Fran again, and I'll just, you know, Mel has congratulations on mastering the art of being kind to yourself. And that is an art that many of us never develop. And it does make a big difference. The other thing that I was going to say is that all of us are in this industry to, and particularly on this call, to create an elevation in our lifestyle, to create abundance, prosperity, whatever words we want to put to it. And, you know, I say all the time, and I reflect back, and I know that I have an enviable lifestyle. And it's because of the choices and actions that I've taken over, you know, 60-some years of living this. And when one gets to a state of comfort in their lifestyle, sometimes it becomes even more difficult to move out of your own comfort zone. And we tend to think, and I'm guilty of a little hubris on that, that, you know, that we really do, you know, have some wisdom, have some knowledge, and have some abilities. And so we start to think that maybe we don't have to, maybe we're exempted from having to actually apply all of the principles and rules, particularly like we're learning in this book. And so I was moving along and you know, going through this study with all of you, and it all of a sudden just became so compelling and so real to me that it, you know, I'm shortcutting myself by not allowing myself to actually do the actions required in the six-step formula. And so it isn't enough for all of us or any of us to be intellectually aware of the six steps. I hope that, others on the call were a lot quicker to the understanding that you actually have to do the six steps. You have to do the physicality of writing down your major definite purpose, your desire, specifically the amount in this chapter, in this formula, in this exercise, the amount of money that we intend to have at a specific point in time as a result of our efforts. And so I did exactly that over the last couple of days. I actually spent about 5 hours on the beach in quiet meditation and action, writing up my formula and writing up those steps. And it was an amazing sensation to have completed it and now actually start to implement it. So I wanted to share that with the group. Back to you, Paul.
Doc, I really appreciate you sharing that. And it's amazing to hear, because there's so many people on this call that are giants to me, that I just look up to in such a high regard. And you're one of those people, Doc. And to hear you say that you are learning things from Napoleon Hill and this call and taking action in your life to have more abundance and so forth, it's miraculous to me. And it just reinforces the point that we never get to a point, in this life at least, where we can stop being students and stop learning and applying. So it's just really exciting for me. I'm looking forward to continuing this study of this book all my life and continuing to gain a deeper knowledge, awareness, and application in my life. So thank you, Doc. Appreciate that.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
Real quick here, based on what the two of you were just saying, it's one of the things that I think, and I think it would be great for everyone to do that, is the more you know, to realize the more you don't know. And to the degree that you do that, your learning will just never cease or never stop, and you'll keep moving forward. So the greater amount of knowledge and information you gain, the more you realize that there's out there and that you don't know, and there's just no end to it. Back to you, Paul.
Excellent point, Melvin. And I've said this before, I say it again, one of my favorite stories in history is Socrates, where in Greece they always said, well, Socrates is the wisest man. Actually, the oracle at Delphi declared him to be the wisest man in all of Athens, and he didn't believe it. He said, no, it can't be true. So he walked around questioning all of the people that he thought were wise, and he finally came to the conclusion that, all right, I am the wisest man, but the only reason that I am the wisest man is because I'm the only one who knows that I know nothing, therefore I am wise. I think that's a great example to live by. Star 6, who's next? We've got a few minutes left. We'd love to hear from you if you haven't come out.
What's exciting, I want to piggyback off what you guys said, and you talk about learning and growing. In fact, what makes life really exciting is learning and growing. There's a lot of bliss associated with that. You develop a veracity for this information, because that is the only time you can experience bliss. And you're going to be able to enjoy life. I mean, I didn't even realize it was April. I mean, Easter, until it was actually the day of Easter. Because I'm enjoying life. Because I'm in the process of growing, and sharing. That's when it's most exciting. When you're on this call, you're not just keeping the information to yourself, but you're sharing it with others and watch others grow. That's what it's all about. Exciting. No amount of money can do this. That's the excitement. Money is a game. You should develop everything so you can go out and play that game and enjoy it, the game. But it's what you do with people, what you do for people, by people, that's going to make it life so exciting. You want to get up. You can't wait to get up every day. You get up before the crack of dawn. 11 o'clock, come out, and you say, man, you got so much done. While people are just barely getting started. It's a feeling I cannot explain. But you should experience it. And I'm sure people on this call are experiencing that feeling. And when you start to take action towards that, that's when you feel the glory. Thank you. Back to you, Paul.
Thank you, Rick. Definitely can sense your passion for learning and life and appreciate that and sharing that with us on the call. Star 6, anyone else want to jump out here? Doc Fran mentioned.
Deborah.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Deborah, good morning.
Good morning. You know, I just wanted to say that this group that we're on with every single morning, this is my counsel at this point. You know, I haven't met anybody, and yet I feel closest to this group, to the most positive people and people who really want to change. And it's just a connection that I have with everybody. I feel like I know everybody. And also, you know, I spend a lot of time on a Facebook group that we have with a lot of other people in one of our businesses, and it's interesting because I gravitate to the most positive and uplifting people in that group as well, and I feel as though I've known them my entire life, and I've never met any of them. And just a couple of weeks ago, I drove up to Dana Point and was able to meet a group of people up there, and I had gone in to use the restroom, and I came out, and there was a woman standing there, and you know, I glanced at her for a second, and then both of us looked back at each other and said each other's names and gave each other hugs, and we were so excited to see each other, and it felt like, and we both laughed about this the rest of the day, it felt like we had known each other for 20 years. I met her online. I've never met her in person. Her name is Barbara Legg, and she's just one of my all-time, you know, most favorite people in the world. And, you know, it's just interesting because I was just thinking about this chapter this morning, and I was thinking about, you know, these people that he had counsel with in his mind. And I feel almost as though I have that sort of relationship with a lot of people, including everybody on this call. And I plan to create my own counsel with, and I think I'm going to keep some of these people in my group as I'm working through these processes and thoughts. But it's interesting what technology has done for us, in that, you know, a lot of times you think about the for a long time it was, you know, their only friends are online, and that was kind of a negative. But when you can find a group of positive, motivational, uplifting people and connect with them every single day, nothing but good can come out of it. And that's exactly what's happening on this call. I absolutely love it. And I appreciate you, Paul, and I appreciate you, Doc Fran, and Melvin, and Rick, and everybody else who has something to say every day that is just absolutely changing my life every single day. And I love you all, and I can't wait to really meet you in person. But until then, you'll be on this call with me, and you'll be in my counsel, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Deborah, thank you so much for coming out and sharing those thoughts. I feel a kinship with you, even though we've never met. I sense that, just like you said, we're on the same frequency. We get on this call, and we all vibrate on a similar tone, and we're all connected. And excellent comments. I also like what you said about forming your own council and how you're going to retain some of these same people. I was actually thinking that exact same thought this morning as we were going through this chapter and thinking about that. Anyone else want to jump out here? got just a short amount of time left.
Hey, Paul. Ray from Jersey.
Hey, Ray. Good morning.
How you doing, buddy?
Excellent.
Those thoughts that Deborah just brought out were perfect between what we went over today and what we went over yesterday. You know, you connect with some like-minded people, and, you know, friendship just falls right into place. You know, the bottom line is strangers are just friends we haven't met yet. That's what I wanted to say for today.
Thank you, Ray. Appreciate that. And it reminded me of one other thing that Deborah said, which is so awesome, is just she said that it used to be that, you know, oh, you've got all these online friends. What are you, some kind of nerd? You know, you can't find any local friends. Well, geez, I mean, I really don't know any other millionaires in network marketing that I could connect with here in my local area. And look at all the people on this call from all over the United States. I mean, it absolutely is a total positive. Listen, I wanted to, real quick, Doc Fran mentioned the six steps, and I scanned back to the chapter. I wanted to hit those real quick just in case, as a checkup for those of us who maybe have forgotten them or not following through, and for those of us who are new, wanted to go over those real quick. First, major definite purpose, be definite to the amount of money you intend to acquire. Get out a sheet of paper, write it across the top. Second, determine exactly what you intend to give in return for the money. Third, establish a definite date which you intend to possess the money. Fourth, create a definite plan for carrying out your desires and begin at once whether you are ready or not. Fifth, write out a clear, concise statement of the amount of money you intend to acquire. Name the time limit for its acquisition. State what you intend to give in return for the money and describe clearly the plan, kind of a restatement of those first four steps. And sixth, read your written statement aloud twice daily, once just before retiring at night and once after arising in the morning. As you read, see and feel and believe yourself already in possession of the money. I am not doing those to the letter, and I have a feeling there's other people on the call who are not doing it. Folks, let's start. Let's do it. Let's follow Doc Fran's example here this morning, and thanks everyone. I've been criticized for using the word love, but I'll use it again. I love you people. I love being on this call. I feel just as Deborah does, a kinship with each of you. We are like-minded. We have goals. We have passion for life. We want to be better. We want to help people. And for that, I love you, and I thank you for being on this call. I thank you for being a part of it. I thank you for buying into the mission of what we're doing here. And just want to appreciate you and challenge you as well as myself. Let's be doers of the word, not just hearers only. Let's get out there today. Take advantage of this time we have. Follow through with our plan. Take action. And never, ever, ever, ever give up on our dreams. Make it a great day, my friends. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning on the Think and Grow Rich call.